All right, fans, great to have you back with us. Giants-Dodgers coming up. I love books about baseball. And over the years, I've come across certain books, and you know they're my favorites. They're on my top 10 list. And I always recommend them, say, you have to read this book. It explains the history of baseball and the personality of baseball. Well, one has come out. Steve Treder wrote it, T-R-E-D-E-R. It's 40 Years a Giant, The Life of Horace Stoneham. And who is Horace Stoneham? Well, the Stoneham family owned the Giants for 1918 through 1976, Charles Stoneham to Horace Stoneham. And we don't have Oracle Park. We don't have Willie Mays. We don't have the Giants that we love so much now without the amazing life of the Stoneham family. Steve Treder sat down and wrote what I think is one of the most outstanding biographies of Giants baseball, of the Stoneham family, that I have come across. Steve's work has been published in 9, the Hardball Times Baseball Annual, the National Pastime. He wrote a weekly column on the topic of baseball history for Hardball Times from 2004 to 2013. He's in the Bay Area. And Steve, welcome to the show. And I want to tell you, there's certain books, 5 or 10 over all these years. This one is now on the list. That's how important the Stoneham family was to Giants history. And you have chronicled all of it. It is a fabulous book. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. With that great introduction, I hope I don't disappoint you. I really appreciate the very kind words. It's been a lot of work. This book was a labor of love and took many years, but I'm so thrilled that it's finally completed.
Tell me how you got involved with this book and some of the research that you did. And then I just want you to tell the story of Charles Stoneham to his son Horace Stoneham and all the accomplishments that the Stoneham family made in the world of baseball. It's incredible. So go ahead. How did it all happen for you?
Sure. I am born and bred a Giants fan. I grew up in Santa Clara, and my mom and dad were both Oakland Oaks fans when they were kids growing up in Oakland. But by the time I came along, they'd moved down to Santa Clara, and the Giants were the team in the Bay Area, so they were big Giants fans. And so I was steeped in Giants lore from the very beginning. And so I love the Giants. I love the history of the Giants. And I knew who Horace Stoneham was, but he really wasn't prominent. And so I didn't really pay much attention to him until later decades when I became not just a Giants fan, but a baseball researcher and historian, and started to really understand what it was. And I wrote a few articles here and there about Stoneham's Giants and this or that, but never really took on the whole subject of Stoneham and his Giants ownership until finally one evening at dinner with a friend of mine by the name of Rob Garrett, who wrote an excellent book about the history of the San Francisco Giants a few years ago called Home Team. Rob looked at me and said, "Look, you know, this biography of Horace Stoneham needs to be written. We all agree that it's a missing link in the baseball history library. And there's nobody better qualified than you, Steve Treder, to write it." And he was right. And so I said, yeah, you're right, I should. And so at that point, I dedicated myself to do it. And it took several years of research and writing. I had the great fortune, Rob put me in touch with Horace Stoneham's surviving family, and specifically his granddaughters, the daughters of Horace Stoneham's daughter, Mary, one of whom is still living in the Bay Area, the Rupert family, Chuck Rupert's daughters. So I was able to be put in touch with them, and they told me lots of great stories and provided me with just a treasure trove of family photographs, many of which appear in the book that weren't previously available publicly, and memorabilia and stuff from their grandfather's life. They loved their grandfather, just absolutely adored him. One of the facets about him is that he was he was a family guy. He loved his son and daughter, and he loved his granddaughters, and they have a great affection for him, which really comes through when you meet him. So I got that, and then I also employed a researcher at the Hall of Fame archives in Cooperstown to go through and see what he could pull out for me in terms of documents, league memos, et cetera, that would reflect on not only Horace, but his father, Charles, in the Giants. So I had that stuff. And then I just, you know, I have a huge library of baseball history books myself, and I plunged into those, and I plunged into many, many more that I sought out in order to do this work. And it took 4 years probably of research before I really focused on the writing. So it's a lot of work, but it's a task that needed to be done because, as you said, Horace Stoneham was one of the most important figures in professional baseball history, and nobody has ever written his biography before. He's been hiding in plain sight all this time.
Mm, boy, wonderful. Stephen Treader is with us, T-R-E-D-E-R. You can get the book, of course, at any of the great outlets. It's a Nebraska publishing, the Book Tree up in Montclair. I'm sure David is going to have this prominently displayed up there. Steve, you don't understand Horace Stoneham until you understand Charles Stoneham, his father, because his father originally bought the club and really groomed Horace to take over for him. And then we'll go through the timeline, a little bit of Horace's accomplishments. There's so many that happened during his tenure, but you don't know Horace until you know Charles Stoneham. So let's start there.
Yes, Charles Stoneham is worthy of at least a full biography himself.
Yes.
Amazing, amazing character. And understand right off the bat that Charles and Horace, father and son, were very close, and Horace revered his father, really, really looked up to him and wanted to impress his father, yet they could not possibly be more different than one another in personality. Horace was a genuinely nice guy, shy, self-effacing, not self-aggrandizing at all, you know, happy to be out of the spotlight, friendly and nice to everybody who knew him, but not somebody who was grandiose or dramatic in any way. Completely different from his father. His father was just the zaniest, wildest, most notorious character, a self-made multimillionaire in a time when multi-millions of dollars was truly a vast fortune. He was one of the richest people in the city of New York. Yet he achieved all that through means which, if perhaps not entirely illegal at the time, although many indictments would suggest that perhaps they were, certainly not honest and forthright. Charles was a duplicitous character who had at least one wife and family apart from the one we know of in secret. You know, he was a most complicated, conflicted, crazy fellow. But among the things he did in his life was he loved baseball. He grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey, was a Giants bug from the day he was born almost. His favorite ball player was the Giants star left fielder, Mike Tiernan, who was from New Jersey. And so once Charles became rich and famous in New York, among the things he wanted to do was to get involved with the Giants. He had a box seat at the Polo Grounds, and he got to know John McGraw. And in 1918, when the Giants franchise was put on the market for sale, it was probably through McGraw, certainly through a Tammany Hall judge by the name of Francis McQuaid, that Charles Stoneham was brought in to be the buyer of the franchise. And he successfully purchased the franchise in partnership with McGraw. Charles Stoneham was the chief shareholder, but John McGraw was his partner in the deal, and McGraw became an officer and vice president of the club, not just the manager anymore. So that's how the Charles came to buy the Giants. But at this time, Horace was a teenager. He was 16 at the time of the purchase. But Charles and Horace both loved the Giants. The Giants were their favorite thing in the world. And so the story is, and I don't know that this is not true, but it certainly sounds like it could be true. The day when the deal was finally sealed, Charles came home that day and sought out his 16-year-old son, Horace, and said, "Horry, I just bought you a ball club." And the ball club he bought, of course, wasn't just any ball club. It was the New York Giants. Understand that the New York Giants at the time were the most successful, most famous, most storied professional sports franchise in the world. The Yankees hadn't become the Yankees yet. The Giants were the team. McGraw was the guy. And this is the team that Charles bought for his son.
Wow. Wow, amazing. So Charles has the ball club. Of course, they have a lot of success in the early 20s with McGraw. The Yankees are a tenant at the Polo Grounds, and finally the Yankees are such a big deal with Babe Ruth. They kick the Yankees out, and the Yankees, you know, break ground in the early 20s to build Yankee Stadium. But Charles runs this ball club, and as you said, with great passion, and he sends Horace out to learn the trade of just being a hard-working man in the family business. And then Charles passes away, and the next thing you know, Horace has the ball club.
Yes, Horace was only 33, or actually not quite. He was just a few weeks shy of his 33rd birthday when his father died of kidney disease in early 1936. And Horace is the heir. Horace was groomed to be the heir, as you say. His father put him to work. He didn't just held an empty title. Horace grew up from the time he was in his early 20s working at every aspect of the business. Remember, the Giants didn't just own the team, the Giants. He also owned the Polo Grounds, the stadium, which at that time was the premier sports venue in the world. And they not only featured baseball, but football and boxing and tennis and, you know, auto racing and all kinds of activities there year round. Well, Horace learned how to run that operation from the ground up. He learned how to do the tickets. He learned how to do the groundskeeping, the behind the scenes maintenance and facilities operations. Horace learned all of that by doing those jobs, and his father required him to do it. So that, and then finally, you know, when he was a little bit older, sitting down with McGraw and with Bill Terry, and really operating the baseball team itself. So Horace was well prepared to take over the ownership. Horace, you know, there's an awful lot of really, really rich kids in the world who get everything they want in the world handed to them on a silver platter and don't understand it or appreciate it. Horace Dunham was not that person. Horace Dunham got it, how lucky he was. There was nothing in the world that he would ever want more than what his father gave him, the Giants. And Horace took that responsibility very seriously. He wanted the Giants to be successful. He wanted the legacy to reflect well on his family and his father. He kept over Horace Dunham's desk for all of his career. He kept a huge painted portrait of his father, and never let anybody forget that I'm here because my dad bought this team. They're Pop's team, and I'm just the fellow he put in charge of it. And so it was a very serious undertaking for Horace. He held no other interests in his life. He didn't have hobbies. He didn't go on vacations. He didn't have other business interests. The Giants were everything to Horace Dunham. He paid attention to the Giants all year round. He attended every game. You know, I'm sure he missed a few for this or that reason, but very, very few. He attended something close to 100% of the Giants games, not only in the regular season, but in the preseason and the old barnstorming days when they'd barnstorm across the country. Horace was there. Absolutely, completely devoted to baseball and the Giants. There may be a few people in the history of the world who watched more baseball games in their life than Horace Dunham. Maybe. There might be, but very few. I mean, maybe Connie Mack, I suppose, you know, somebody like that. But that's the kind of baseball devotion and complete dedication to understanding how this game works, how baseball games are won and lost, what it takes to be a good team, what good players look like, how you can recognize them, how you can sign them, develop them. Horace, that was his life. He spent his entire life being passionately interested in that. And as a result, the Giants were successful under his tenure. They weren't as successful as he would have liked. They weren't the Yankees. They weren't even the Dodgers. But they won more than they lost. They had their share of pennants and World Series, and certainly the Giants were second to none in identifying and developing individual star players, not just Willie Mays, but so many others. And that's a testament to the Stoneham system of scouting and identifying and developing talent.
There's so many areas that Horace excelled in, and just to touch on a few, and it would take forever to go through all of them, but a very special man, and I'm glad we could do this background. So the background is so important to learn the dedication of Horace Dunham, but he was his own general manager from about the 1940s on when Bill Terry left the Giants. You have the integration issue where he signs Hank Thompson. And in 1947, you've got Willie Mays being signed. You've got Alex Pompez, the Cuban scout, being hired by Horace and opening up the Caribbean to the Giants of Philippe Alou and the countless Juan Marichals and people that are brought in. He is the trailblazer for that. Plus, he ends up moving his team, his beloved Giants, from New York, where he had the Stoneham legacy, to San Francisco and Candlestick Park. And I know I'm going through a lot of things, but it's all in the book, and it's all so richly written that you get the feeling you're there. And then, of course, 1962, winning the National League playoff and the pennant, and, of course, eventually selling the ball club. But so much in between. He opens up the area of Japanese baseball. He brings Masanori Murakami to the United States with two other minor league players from Japan, and Murakami becomes a big star. There's an international incident, and there's no Japanese player after Murakami goes back to Japan until Nomo in the 1990s. There's so much that Horace did in his lifetime that he is one of the most instrumental owners, I think, in baseball history. So, you know, we could go on for an hour about it, but I just want to summarize a little bit of that and everything that he accomplished as the owner of the Giants.
Yes, it is a very big story with lots and lots of events and characters in it. The way I guess I would sum up Horace Stoneham's success and legacy in that regard is that we baseball fans and historians, we properly honor Branch Rickey for being the trailblazer who broke the color line, who signed Jackie Robinson and integrated Major League Baseball in 1947. Rickey deserves great credit for that. But Horace Stoneham, while he wasn't first to the post there, as you say, he waited a little bit before integrating in 1949 with Hank Thompson and Monty Irvin. When Stoneham went in that direction, he did it better than Rickey did. The Giants became not just racially integrated, but culturally integrated with Latin American baseball to a degree that no other franchise did. The Giants were the best through the 1950s and 1960s. No other organization matched their capacity to reach out and engage with the African American community and all of the baseball communities in Cuba, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico. The Giants had Alex Pompez, a very key figure you name. Alejandro Pompez was a black Cuban American who was the owner of the New York Cubans Negro League baseball team. Their home park was the Polo Grounds, so Horace Stoneham was their landlord, and that's how Horace and Alex got to know each other. Once the late 40s and early 50s ensue and the integration of Major League Baseball is underway, Alex Pompez and Horace Stoneham kind of look at each other and think, how can we make this work out the best for both of us? Because the Negro Leagues are going to fall apart. What's going to replace it? And so Horace Stoneham became the first Major League owner to have a black man in his front office. In 1951, they brought Pompez right onto the payroll. He was officially a scout, but he ran a whole network of scouts throughout the United States and Latin America. Pompez was the advocate for the older uncle figure to give advice and counsel to all of these players in the organization the Giants had. Pompez was the guy who helped them acculturate. He helped them with the language and the culture and the money and all the stuff. Pompez was the guy who did all that. It was a remarkable, forward-looking achievement that Stoneham and his organization endeavored and successfully achieved. And of course, at the time, nobody heard about it. They didn't do it for publicity. They didn't have big interviews about it. It wasn't, you know, written about in the sporting news and all kinds of things. They just did it. And similarly, Horace was the owner in baseball who was most enthusiastic about reaching out to Japan through his former Giant employee by the name of Lefty O'Doul. Horace became very engaged with Japanese baseball, and through that became the first United States major league team to employ a Japanese player, Masanori Murakami, in 64-65, which wasn't exactly the deal that the Japanese league thought they were getting into. So, as you say, it was a misunderstanding between the two. The Japanese didn't think they were giving away Murakami for good. The Giants wanted to keep him. But the Giants had him for a short time in 64-65, and Murakami was brilliant. And, you know, it would then the Japanese after that said, no way, we're not letting any of our top prospects go. And so it would be 30 more years before Major League Baseball and Japanese baseball reintegrated in the 1990s. He was just – Stoneham was decades ahead of his time in
ways. What's interesting, the rivalry. Of course, you have Giants-Dodgers this weekend. Giants-Dodgers really came about under Horace Stoneham from the 30s forward. And the rivalry continued when both teams went to the West Coast. But this rivalry, Horace was adamant to take on O'Malley and Ricky and all the things. And it was a real challenge for Horace to the point where he hired Leo DeRocher, which was such a departure for him because Horace was a nice man. And Horace liked to drink. And Horace had all his buddies around and they would drink. And sometimes they would be named the manager. And they would give advice, but it was he would say, sitsy, and you would have to have some drinks with him. Well, Mel Ott was his manager, a nice guy, but the Dodgers and Giants were having this big rivalry in the 40s, and he departed from his normal nice guy atmosphere and brought in the ferocious Leo DeRocher, who won a pennant, obviously, in 1951, the World Series in 54, then they had a falling out. But that's also in the book. But I just want to point out the rivalry Giants-Dodgers came about from Horace Stoneham during the 30s, and it continued on right to today. And he went and got Leo DeRocher. But the one thing about Horace that I learned from the book is that he liked to have a drink, and it was part of his personality. And that's what he did, and he had his crew of people who were with him. He brought the Giants to Arizona for spring training. He built Casa Grande, which was decades ahead of his time, of creating a ballpark with a hotel and all sorts of things around it, which people try to do today even. So it's all in the book. It's all in the book, 40 Years a Giant, The Life of Horace Stoneham. And Steve, why I'm so I'm taking over the interview, but why I'm so happy to have you on, I'm interviewing myself here, why I'm so happy to have you on is that there's really nothing at the ballpark about Charles Stoneham or Horace Stoneham. It's like the Stonehams didn't exist, but you don't have the Giants today without the Stoneham family. And that's what I get from the book.
Yes, Horace Stoneham's personality was such that he didn't want to be in the spotlight. He didn't want to be publicly known. He preferred to be a private person and behind the scenes. And so, you know, he wasn't prominent the way other owners, Walter O'Malley, Charlie Finley, Bill Veeck, Tom Yawkey, were known to the fans. And you just can't think about the history of those franchises without those very prominent owners. Stoneham was not that person. So when he sold the team and retired in the mid-70s, his name was largely forgotten. And to the Giants' great credit, when they built the new ballpark in San Francisco, and it's just such a beautiful facility, and they so much of it, they really made sure that the decorations on the walls and the whole theme of it honored not just Willie Mays and Juan Marichal, their great San Francisco players, but Mel Ott and John McGraw and Christy Mathewson, Bill Terry, the great New York figures in the franchise's storied history. But not the ownership.
I know.
Charles,
you don't understand.
It's a huge missing piece.
Yeah, you don't understand who Mel Ott was, who Bill Terry, Carl Hubbell. The names, the numbers that we see up there, you don't understand it without knowing who Horace Stoneham is, what his family was like. And look, he got involved with Candlestick, which was a big political swindle. Back in the 50s, that he ended up, he wanted a beautiful ballpark with a lot of parking, and he sure got one. They just didn't deal with the weather properly. So there's such a rich story here that goes from 1918 to 1975, 76 and beyond, but it explains every nook and cranny of Giants history and how they became the Giants of today. I'm glad you brought up the part. Peter McGowan got it. He understood. Larry Bear understands Mario Alioto. That's why there's so many touches around the ballpark reminding everyone of the Polo Grounds. There's just not a lot about Stoneham, and I think that's the key. So, Steve, very successful book. I'm just happy to have you on, and we could do a whole show together for about an hour just on this story.
Well, Marty, it's been my great pleasure to be on with you. I've been a fan of yours for many years, back before, even before you were doing these Giants pregame shows, but back when you were doing the A's games as well. I've always enjoyed your show. Is very you have you bring a sort of a thoughtful and, you know, a deeper level of insight into this stuff than we hear often on sports talk radio. So thank you for that. And, you know, Marty, if you want to invite me back for another shot, you know where to get me. I'll be happy to come on.
Absolutely, because as we tell this story and you fill in the sort of the content of the highlights that I just gave, it's a fascinating story, but it's all in the book. 40 Years, A Giant, The Life of Horace Stoneham, Stephen Treder, T-R-E-D-E-R, Nebraska Publishing. Steve, thank you so much, and we will have you back on again. This is a really good story. It's in my top 10 list, so I want you to know that. So congratulations on a great book.
Well, thank you, sir. My great pleasure. Please take care.
All right. More coming up. KNBR 680-1045, the sports leader.